Okay, everyone, this is Monday, January 11th, and this is the call with Martha on spirituality and inspiration with the October 2015 cohort, all sections included. So take it away, Woo! Martha.
All right, let's get her going. So I loved your questions. It's so fun to get up in the morning and then find a bunch of questions that are like right up my alley. We've never called it spirituality and inspiration before, have we, Jen? That's a new thing.
It is. I love it.
I know. We're just coming out of the closet every which way. I love it. I've been reading a lot of books by people who are sort of self-helpy, and they're all saying, oh, all right, I have spirit guides. Great. So I loved your questions, and we're going to jump into those. Okay, the first one, I put this at the top anyway because it sort of sets the tone for the whole thing, is hail. And by the way, do they have a mechanism for raising their hands, Jen?
Five star.
Okay, so if you have a question, I'll pause between some of these because it's fun to read the written ones, but it's also fun to, like, have a little interaction. And I may call on you just to do a little coaching as per usual. Okay, so Heather asks, how do we live wilder or more bewildered on an everyday basis? That's like a setup question. It's like we paid you to ask that, didn't we? Because that's sort of where my personal practice has gone as I've moved out to the woods and then made more and more changes to just, it's interesting, I was in Africa last summer, and I was in this hunting lodge that was away from all other humans. There was just one old Shangan lady, and myself. They were doing construction in the usual camp, and I had to go like 6 mood drive. Somebody would drive me and drop me off for the night. And the night in Africa is not a quiet experience. Sorry. It's like you hear all these thumpings and bumpings and squealings and roarings and crashings. And I could feel, if I got quiet, I could feel the energy of this old Shangan lady. And then I could feel all these big animals as energy and no other human at all. And it was interesting because I started to lose all culture, like, I started to feel more like an animal, and the feeling was of much more immediacy and presence and peace, even though animals are supposed to live in this state of constant agitation, and there are many roarings, I have to tell you. For me, it was a state of such liberation. I really felt like I could start to find out who I was without any human pressures at all. And that has continued. So that's what I mean by bewildering. And the way you do it on an everyday basis, I'm going to go right to Robin's question, and actually several of you. Cindy, well, I'll get to you. So Robin wrote, I've really started to tune in to the constant state of fear that I'm living in. Bringing my thoughts to inquiry is helpful, yet seems to be just scratching the surface. Mind-body tools have brought me into my fear, and I've begun to melt it. But it seems to come back renewed each day like the movie Groundhog Day. I've noticed my thinking resisting making diving into my fear a daily practice. In general, my thinking wants to stay in charge, and I need constant reminders to listen to my body. I've set alarms, I've written notes to myself, but I can avoid all of these if my thinking deems them inconvenient right now. I tell myself to just do it, but then sometimes I don't. What's the next step? So if you've been reading the newsletter, and you will soon get a copy of the book I just wrote if you want one, they have to, like, write in and say they want one, don't they, Jen, so that we have their address and everything?
Yeah, and today's the deadline, too.
Woo! Yes. Send us your address.
Yeah, you should have received an email.
What they call an uncorrected proof or a bound galley or an advanced reader copy that usually goes out to reviewers. I'm sending it to every coach who wants it. You can see all my boo-boos. Okay, so the whole deal is it all starts with learning to be without fear in the present moment, which several of you ask about. And the way you do that, let me coach Robin, and you will see how I approach this. And it's been working really well for me. And believe me, I seem to be hardwired for anxiety, so I know the feeling of daily fear, even though you're practicing like a mofo. So, Robin, could you do 5-star? Could you press 5-star on your phone, Robin Ehrman?
She already here. Did, and she is here.
How you doing?
She is a he.
Ah, yeah. It's nice to hear your voice, Robin. Like Christopher.
Hello.
Robin.
Surprise.
I know, 2 men in one one call. We are scoring today. So, Robin, it's nice to hear your voice. You live like a stone throw away from me, so it's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's a good long throw, but yes.
Yes, it's a very serious throw. It's a Superman throw, but it's in the same general area code. So it's not, I because your wife works for me, I know that your life has been pretty powerfully impacted by environment lately. Like, this is not all just generated fear from inside. But it's also true that when circumstances line up and there's sort of a perfect storm in your life, I don't know if yours is a perfect storm, but I would say it's definitely a storm. I don't want to talk about the details of your life, but when there are problems, medical problems with multiple family members, that's a storm. So, how have you been? You say you've been bringing your thoughts into your fear, and you're trying to melt it. So, how do you process that internally? How would you describe the process you've been unsuccessfully using?
It's completely unsuccessful, so that's good. I have had some success with it, and that's why I keep trying it, but it feels like it just goes away pretty quickly. The process, actually, Heather gave me some really nice coaching. And
oh, cool.
We started with a black ball of fear in my belly that was hard and shiny, and I went in and became the ball of fear, and it kind of morphed into a squishy black ball of fear. And I came out of it, and she said, I don't think you're done. And I said, I don't think I'm done either. And I went back in, and it turned into sort of a red ball of jello. And I decided that I could just kind of go down into that red ball of jello, and it would actually suspend me and hold me in a kind of a nice, lovely way. And then ultimately it just kind of melted out like jello that just wasn't cold anymore and just melted all over the place. So that's sort of the visual that I've been using, starting with this black ball of fear, getting into it, and then melting it into just red kind of bloody mess.
Great. On my hands is a hideous bloody mess, but I'm in it. I laugh at your pain. No, I laugh because I've been there so many times myself. I want you to play with, I think those are great ideas. There's also a tool from acceptance and commitment therapy that I sometimes use. It's a little bit advanced, but you're already doing a version of it. So I'm going to quickly coach you through that one because it might be helpful because you're already starting it. So
that sounds good.
Can you find the black ball of fear right now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So what I want you to do is imagine pulling it out of your body and putting it in front of you on the ground. And then look at it and tell me what it looks like.
Okay. So it looks like one of those balls that you play with when you're a kid, that when you shake it, it has the little answer key inside, and it might come up with one of many 20 different answers.
A magic 8-ball?
A magic 8-ball. It looks like a magic 8-ball.
Wow, it's smaller than I thought. Okay.
So
do you want to take it and put it back in your body? Does that appeal to you?
Well, yes and no. I think part of me says, hey, get back in there. That's comfortable. I like you in there. And part of me says, no. I don't want to have that in there anymore.
Go to the part of you that is resisting and find it in your body. Where is it?
That's all of my neck and shoulders and back.
What temperature is it?
It's hot and it's purple.
Okay. So can you pull it out, like taking off a clingy wetsuit? Can you, like, slurp it out of your body and move the eight ball to the right and then put the hot purple network of anxiety down on the floor in front of you?
Okay, I'm going to take it off like a shirt.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Can you see it on the floor there?
Yeah.
I see it as kind of squid-like. How do you see it?
Yeah. It's thick. It's like a thick neoprene.
Okay. Do you feel like putting it back inside?
No, thank you.
Okay, so you're going to move it to the right. The eight ball's there. Now you're moving the purple thing over, too. Find the resistance to putting the purple thing in your body. Find it and tell me where it is.
In my chest.
How big is it?
It's like a big balloon all the width of my chest.
How does it, is it prickly? Is it warm? Is it, how else would you describe it?
Really, it's like a balloon. It's taking up space and it's getting in the way of my lungs from breathing.
Okay. So pull it out and put it on the ground in front of you.
Okay.
What color is it?
Red.
How big is it?
About the size of a party balloon.
Do you feel like putting it back in your chest?
No.
Okay, you're going to push everything to the right. So now you've got the eight ball, the purple thing, and the red balloon. Find the resistance to the red balloon. The part that says no to that.
Okay, it's in my eyes and my ears.
Okay. What does it feel like?
It's like a kind of a yellowish white pulsing.
Okay. So you're going to pull that out, put it on the ground in front of you. What does it look like?
Looks like if you took a wiffle ball and put a light inside of it, and the light was shining out all the holes of the wiffle ball.
That sounds kind of interesting. It wants to come live inside you again. How do you feel about that?
I don't think I want to put a plastic ball back in my head.
Okay. Excuse me. I'm going to sneeze. No, I'm not. Okay, so push everything to the side. Now you got four things. Find the resistance to the wiffle ball. Where is it?
In my jaw.
What does it feel like?
Blue and tight.
Mm-hmm. Can you pull it out and put it on the ground in front of you, please?
Okay.
You can see it there. What does it look like?
Looks like one of those old-time animal traps that snaps shut on the leg.
Do you feel like putting it back inside?
No.
All right. Push everything to the side. Find the resistance to the blue trap that was in your jaw.
It's in my hands, my wrists.
What is it like?
Heavy and gray.
Mm-hmm. Can you pull those off like gloves and put them on the ground in front of you?
Okay.
So would you, the two gray gloves feel like they need a place to be, and they want to come back into your hands. What do you say?
I'm going to think I'll take my away.
Okay, find the resistance to the gray gloves. Where is it?
In my toes.
What does it feel like?
Ice. Feels like I have ice on my toes.
Okay, so pull the ice out of your toes. Put it on the ground in front of you. There's a line of things now. So
okay.
We're going through layers and layers and layers of resistance, you guys. And this, what this does partly is it just brings so much attention to the body compass in this very specific way. So put the icy toes down in front of you. What does that look like?
It just looks like kind of a this little kind of concave pieces of ice that would hold my toes.
So are you willing to let them come and live with you?
No, I don't like ice.
Okay, find your resistance to the icy toes. Where is it?
In my intestines.
In your what?
Intestines.
Oh, okay. What does it feel like?
Forgive me, but it feels brown.
That's fine. Pull it out. Put it on the ground. What does it look like?
Okay. Blob.
What color is it?
Brown.
What temperature?
Hot. Doesn't smell very good.
Oh, it is a poopy thing. So your body needs some of that to function normally. Would you be willing to have at least part of it back inside you?
I could probably churn up some new ones.
All right. So we found a place where the resistance to a layer of resistant. You're resisting your resistance is what this is. So you found a place where your resistance is not completely 100%. So now what I want you to do is look all the way over to your right at the first black ball that came out of your I believe it was your chest area.
Solar plexus area.
Just notice, has it changed?
I can still see the 8-ball size thing.
Have any of the other things, the red balloon, the icy toes, the gray gloves, are they changing in any way?
Well, the shirt is kind of just lifeless with nothing inside.
Okay. Is it any less threatening?
Yes, because it just looks like a shirt.
Check out the icy toes. Are they any warmer? Have they begun to melt at all?
Yeah. Yeah, those are just very
so amazing. What happens when you get, what we're doing here, it's, I don't know why this works, but it actually does. And I could keep doing this with Robin for, another 20 minutes. It would be just fine, no matter how long it took. So the point is that we're trying to get to a place where he can stop resisting what he's feeling. And the way you can, if something is just too huge, like he's got a lot of loved ones facing scary, scary things right now, it's very, very hard to get past your resistance to feeling that fear. So by looking at the resistance to the resistance and going through layer, 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 until you find something that's a little less horrible, for some reason, you contact a point of non-resistance that then allows the other resistance to change, and ultimately it allows even the deepest part of the fear to change. So that's a very abstract way to do it. And usually, I mean, it's fascinating to me because Robin's fear is really in every inch of his nervous system. Usually two or three iterations of this, and the person is like, oh, I'll totally take that back. And as soon as you begin to feel able to take things back, your own feelings back into your body, the weird thing is you realize that your resistance was causing most of your negative emotion, and as they come back in, they become positive. So it could take an hour for Robin to get there on this first try, but I wanted to sort of demonstrate that for you. Again, it's an advanced tool that you don't have to learn, but it's fun. A lot of you expressed curiosity about various aspects of dealing with fear, and this that exercise actually is really weirdly powerful. But then, since this is Spirituality and Inspiration Week, I want to take you to a different place. Robin, you said you've been using the mind-body tools. Have you been using the thought questioning? You said bringing my thoughts to inquiry. So you've been using the Byron Katie work, right?
Yes.
Now, here's the deal, you guys. I learned how to do that work, the work from books. And the questions were written down, and I knew already that no thought is absolute because our perception is subjective. So I'd go, all right, my life is horrible. Is it true? Well, it feels true. Can I absolutely know it's true? No, because you can never know that anything's true. Okay, go to the next. You know, think of three pieces of evidence. I put in the think of three pieces of evidence because without that, it just went over the surface of my thoughts. And it sounds like you said the inquiry just seems to be scratching the surface. But then I went to Katie's 9-day school, and I realized she uses those questions in a very different way than I had been using them. So I really want to model for everyone how this new process, this new way of doing inquiry works, because number one, it's much more spiritual. It's not, I thought this was just a very rational tool. And the other reason is it works like gangbusters. So the first question is, are your thoughts true? So can you think of a scary thought, Robin, that's really frightening to you right now? It can be anything.
Yeah.
Is there one you're willing to share with us so we can work with it?
Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to start making money.
Okay. So that is a statement, but the fear is something deeper like, I'm out of money, or I'm not, you know, my family's going to implode because I'm not making money. What's the fear under the question? What's the deepest fear in the middle of the night, the thing you don't even want to say to yourself? I'll never make money again.
I feel like it's something to do with wanting to be chosen to make money instead of, it's a disempowerment thing.
So would it be something like, and you're being very, this is actually great because we're seeing all the ways that we typically dodge our fear, like we don't want to say the thing we're actually thinking in our heart of hearts. It's there, but we don't give it words or language because it's just too scary. So, Robin, you're being incredibly brave. Can you start to feel your way into that question until you come to the very most frightening thought? especially hard for a guy to do this because men don't have permission to be afraid.
There's so many, I'm not sure which one is it.
Grab one. Grab one that really chills your insides, makes you feel sick in the middle of the night.
I don't believe I can do it on my own.
I can't. How about just, I can't do this?
Yeah.
I can't do this. Like, I can't survive what's happening to me. I can't hang in.
Yeah. It's
okay.
Too overwhelming.
Yep. I can't do this. And every single person on the phone has felt this way. And right now for Robin, there's a lot of circumstantial stuff that makes it seem very, very real. So I can't do this. The answer to the first question, if you're honest, is it true that you can't do this?
No, it's not true.
Okay. Can you tell me why?
If I don't stop myself, I can.
Okay. Now, that felt to me, you said that inquiry was scratching the surface, and that feels, and tell me where I'm wrong, it felt like that came from your mind. Like you kind of buckled up and you went, all right. The truth is I probably can do it. I just, you know. But it didn't feel like you got significant relief from that. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, I didn't, because I'm not sure I won't stop myself.
Okay.
So I know that it's possible, but I don't know that I'll actually do it.
Right. So I won't, let's say I won't do this. In the end, I won't be able to do this. I'm going to change that question a little. In the end, I won't do this. Okay. Now, here's the part where it gets really different, you guys, and where it segues with wildness and spirituality and everything. Really deep inside you, in a place without language, there is a part that I call it a sense of truth. And it's when somebody shows you a math equation as a kid and you realize, oh, that works, that answer is correct, it actually strikes into that sense of truth, even if it's just a math equation. But it also, it's like a bell that sounds when you hear something that's deeply true. Like someone says, like, for example, when I listen to Eckhart Tolle and he says, nothing that happens to you will ever happen in the future. When it's happening now. And nothing has ever happened to you in the past. When it happened, it was happening now. And I'd never thought about that exactly, but when I heard him say that, it struck that very, very deep chord of truth. And you kind of go, oh, yeah. And there's a settling sensation. So, Robin, have you ever had the experience of hearing something and thinking, that is true? I all of me knows that's true.
The example you just gave, I think I had the same reaction.
Okay, so what I want you to do now, because you've spent tons of time feeling around in your body for all the resistance and all the fear, which is it's really good for getting into the body. And now I want you to go deep, deep, deep inside to the place that recognizes truth. So I just gave you that Eckhart Tolle quote, and when you thought of it, oh yes, now is all I have, now is all I will ever have to deal with. Where do you feel that land?
I think it's right where the black ball of fear often is. Right in my solar plexus.
Almost as if you can go into, like, as smaller and smaller, and if you were to turn inward and go deeper and deeper and deeper, and everything got smaller and smaller, you could go into a cell, and a cell, if you went deep inside it, it would split out into many molecules that are actually spread out. If you went deep into a single molecule, you would find atoms. If you went deep into a single atom, you would find subatomic particles that are so tiny and so far apart that if one of them were the size of a tree, the atom itself would be the size of a football stadium. So you're mostly emptiness. And can you picture yourself going deeper and deeper and deeper into the substance of what you actually are? And at the very center, you go actually into the black ball and then through it into something even deeper. There's no way to really talk about it because you're going into the center, but you're going infinitely deeply into the center. And right in that place, if you stand just there, can you find a sense of peace? If you just fill your mind, for example, with the thought, this moment now is all I ever need to deal with. Does that feel true?
I want it to be true, but my brain is saying no.
Okay, the brain is saying no. Now, are we talking about the now is all there ever is thing? Because the brain knows that that's not true. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Not wrong. The now that is all there ever is, and I'm thinking about what happens next.
Uh-huh, okay. So think of another thing, not necessarily the Eckhart Tolle thing, that you that when you think it, when you feel it, you know for sure. For example, one that I often use with people is, do you know that you would not voluntarily want to cause suffering for another being? I don't know whether that's true or not for you. Some people say yes, some people say no. What's the answer for you?
No.
You would not want to cause suffering.
I would not want to cause.
Now, on the phone, you guys, and he's been really hanging in there with me. And if you listen to the recording, you'll feel and hear a different tone in his voice when he came back with that answer. He said, no, I don't want to cause suffering. That is it's sort of a timbre of a voice that is coming from the place that knows. So even if his mind is a hurricane, when he focuses in with one-pointed attention on something that, like, I do not wish to cause suffering for another being, he can go for a moment into this place that is very still and it's just true. He knows it to be true. It's his experience, and he knows it to be deeply true. That space is what you're looking for with the second question of inquiry. So somebody else asked, how can a coach be effective if he or she is in a lot of meltdown and chaos himself or herself? And the person actually said, I'm sure the answer is to just lay low until you feel better, but, you know, what if we don't have the leisure to do that? I'm looking at a question from Donna. So actually, it's not my instruction at all to lay low until you feel better, because if that were true, I would never have coached anyone. What I do suggest is that you learn to find the sense of truth at the center of the hurricane inside you. It's like a very still point. It never moved. So, Robin, can you sink into that, the knowledge that you would not? Another one is, I've been doing the best that I could. Can you feel like every day I try my best? That also can help take people to their sense of truth. Can you find it again?
Yeah.
Wow, you can feel the difference in his voice. So everybody on the phone, if you're going along with us and you can find your own sense of truth in these same questions, then please do. If not, go to any lengths at all to think of something you know for sure, to quote Oprah. And the knowledge in the Tao Te Ching, the very first thing it says is that the Tao that has that can be spoken is not the Tao. And then it says later, those who know don't talk, those who talk don't know, which is an English translation, but in Chinese it also can mean there is that within you which does not talk, but it knows. And there is that within you which does not know, but it talks. So all the talking in Robin's head, I won't be able to do this, this is all going to hell in a handbasket, whatever, I won't be able to make money, that's what talks, but it doesn't know. And then the last two times he's answered and said, yeah, you know, I've got it, that's what knows without talking. It's a sensation of settling and of stillness and of truth. So that's where you go to answer the second question in the Byron Katie work. And so people can sit in meditation. Since I went to the 9-day school, I will get a question or a frightening thought, and I'll ask, is it true? And then I'll ask, and the answer is usually yes if I'm afraid of it. It feels true. My mind thinks it's true. And then I think, can I absolutely know that that thought is true? And I will sit with that for a whole hour, 2 hours, a whole day, waiting to sink into the place of truth so that I can see what reality is from there, from the part of me that does not talk. So this is where I've been skimming over the surface. So Robin, you've found this place. Last two questions, you found it. Every day you do your best and you don't try to cause others suffering. So get into the person who knows that. And then ask the question, can I absolutely know that I can't do this? That I can't cope with my life?
No.
Can you feel that, the power? And that's how everyone at the school was doing it. And these were people who'd never heard of it, and they were literally just reading off a note card. But one thing that the facilitators are taught is you don't comfort someone, you don't push someone, you don't come in to help. I always said, come in and do the heavy lifting. I was wrong. What you do is you sit with them, and you wait until they can tell you if they absolutely know that something is true. And it comes up from within. I'd been using just the mind on this. I actually told Katie and Stephen afterward, change the word mind in some of these books because it's coming up from something that is not mind. So what's coming up from within Robin now is something ancient and ageless and external to the physical body. It's, well, not external, it's pervading the physical body, but it's not the physical body. It is deeper even than his body. So he's gone into, I call it the meta self. There's the meat self, M-E-A-T, that is just a lot of dials and whistles made out of meat. And then there's the meta self, the other self that is inhabiting it, the ghost in the machine. So, Robin, you say you've set alarms, you've written yourself notes, you've done all these things. But because it's been at the level of mind, it's so easy for fear to blow that out, just all your best efforts. But if you can sink into this place just to get a little peace, like is it a relief right now to go to that place where you know that you've never caused anyone to suffer and there's a little tiny island of peace in all the chaos? Can you find that?
Yeah, and the thing that got me there is knowing so truly how deeply I love my boys. And there's no way that that's not true.
Okay, so I can feel that in my whole body. I'm getting like the chill of truth. It's like resonating like crazy. So now we know that's a pathway through Robin's brain to his the knowledge of the truth. And it is his love for his sons. So you can use that, Robin, as a road into the part of you that knows the truth. You just ask, do I love my sons? and wham, it'll take you right into a real truth. Now, compared to that truth, I love my sons. I can't do this. Can you feel how it has a different energy?
Yeah.
It doesn't come from the same place. Now, I believe, for example, that there will be a time when my body is so damaged or ill or old that I will say with great peace and relief, I can't do this, and I will die. And at that point, I believe that it will feel like a deep truth in my soul, and it will feel like peace to say, I can't do this. But right now for Robin, the sentence, I can't do this, is not taking him into this place of peace and truth. And you can feel the difference. We can feel it. Robin, you can feel it. So the answer to the question, can I absolutely know that I can't do this, is no. Then the next question is, imagine yourself, I don't know where it's worst, at night when you can't sleep, put yourself into a situation where you see yourself dealing with this. So what's a bad time for you, Robin?
When I'm trying to figure out what my day is going to look like and when I'm going to do what, and it just feels like a dump truck full of stuff fell on my head and I don't know how to sort through it.
Yeah. Boy, have I been there. So watch yourself as though you're standing a short distance away in this sense of truth. So the part of you that knows the truth and is the truth is standing there watching Robin make his list of things to do and seeing the discouragement. Now, just tell us what happens and how does that Robin react when he believes the thought, I can't do this. What happens?
He loses focus. He just jumps from one thing to another. He doesn't make a plan. He just starts going and then gets distracted on something else and starts a lot of things and finishes nothing.
So be that guy and tell me, how do you feel when you believe the thought, I can't do this?
Defeated, sad, guilty, shamed, not guilty.
What happens in your body?
Big black ball of fear.
Here we are again. How do you treat other people when you believe the thought, I can't do this? Just notice, just watch and report. How do you treat others?
I don't really listen. I don't give them my full attention.
Yeah, you're in a panic. And how do you treat yourself when you believe the thought, I can't do this?
Very poorly.
Yeah?
I have lots of bad things to say about myself.
So you attack yourself. You criticize yourself. You berate yourself.
Yeah. And I become a victim.
Yeah, and then you feel helpless and angry because you're the victim of your own attack.
Yeah.
Now, the new way I do this, guys, is that you let him describe absolutely everything he can think of that comes up when he believes this thought. You really want to wring it out, and it takes a long time. We're actually having, Robin and I are basically having a whole coaching session now, but I really wanted to see you to see how this works. And fear is the number one issue in all our lives. So when you get someone who's very afraid and you can see how to coach through that, you are 99% of the way done with learning to coach. If you can coach someone out of fear, everything else will fall in their laps. So Robin, my dear, you've already seen that the thought, I can't do this, is not true to the deepest part of yourself. It does not bring peace. And now you've seen that it causes unbelievably negative behaviors and feelings. So now I think we've gone through it enough. I would keep going with him for several sessions on this one thought. If it took that long, we are drilling for truth. And once you find the truth, after drilling down for it, it really does. It changes things, not at the surface level, but at a much deeper level. So after watching what the thought does to you, now imagine yourself making a list of things to do. And the thought, I can't do this, just goes, whoo, disappears, taken away, gone. Absolutely no ability to think it or remember it. Now watch that man without the thought. What happens? Who are you without the thought, I can't do this?
A man with a plan.
Wow. Your voice sounds completely different. Feel into it. Feel what it would be to not have that thought. How would it affect you? You're a man making a plan. And I can feel the thought trying to come back, by the way. It's like riding a bicycle for the first time. You feel very wobbly trying to ride this. And that's why you really want to dwell on the questions before the fourth question, because otherwise you can't even imagine it. And as much time as it's taken us, I'm actually pushing him to go a little faster than I would typically do, because I want to get to the other questions later on. I thought this one was the key question of the day, so I'm happy to be here. Robin, I'm trying to give you time to play with the thought of yourself without, I can't do this, the image of yourself not thinking that. Who would you be
like
without
that.
The thought, I can't do this?
I feel like I have the football. You guys were talking about football, and I've got the football, and I'm running for the end zone. And guys are flying at me, but every time I manage to step to the side, and just like I'm free to run forward, and everything that comes at me can't get me.
It's so awesome. That thought, to me, feels so true, Robin. Does it strike that resonance of true in you also?
Yeah, it feels so good.
Yeah, that's who you really are. And those guys leave blood, sweat, and tears on the field, and they love it. You know, that's what a warrior lives for. To go out into the thick of it and encounter the fiercest opposition possible and prove himself against that. So when you feel that deep resonance, to me, it's the soul saying, this is what I came to do. It's on. Game on. And are you going to take some hits? Guaranteed. Are you going to get bumped and bruised? You betcha. Can you do it? Absolutely. And you'll be a hero to everyone looking on. And to yourself. And to your sons. In reality. So can you give me a turnaround for I can't do this?
I am doing this.
I am doing it. Obviously, I can. I am. Another one is my thoughts can't do this. I can't do this with my thoughts. Your thoughts are all over the map. But they never, ever take away. The truth never leaves you. The thoughts can go on 24/7 for years and years. In the end, they're going to fall silent, and the truth will be there as solid as space. You cannot harm it. So your thoughts can't do it, but you can. And can you start to see how this is a way for you to blast your thoughts away? Like your ego is going to have to die as your hero comes out to do this?
Yeah.
Your ego should be terrified. It's being demolished, but it's being demolished by the deliberate intention of your soul, which does not want an ego burdening it. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Not wrong.
So this is Robin's path to awakening, to enlightenment. He is, at some level, I believe he is voluntarily walking into the storm that is going to destroy his ego. And it is not for the faint-hearted, and he's doing it anyway. And in his heart of hearts, he's known it all along. Robin, tell me where I'm wrong.
You're not wrong.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to drop the mic and leave now because, no, I'm not really. Robin can because you got there, buddy. You did it. You found your way all, you found your way through all the ego crap right into your essential self, which is huge and powerful and undaunted. And you can rest there. And you can go there every morning as you're making your list of things you can to do. You can go, wait, I know I love my sons. Find that feeling. Okay, now what am I afraid of? This day is just too much. Okay. I'm going to sit with my love for my sons being my measure of truth, and I'm going to hold that question. Today is impossible, and I'm going to wait until I know whether or not it's the truth. So where I was using it as an intellectual exercise, Katie uses it as a drill that goes down into something that our rationalist culture doesn't even believe in, which is the certainty of the sense of truth that is the center of the soul. And that is the only place for refuge from anything in life, but especially when things get really bad. And now Robin is forced to find his way there or he lives in hell. Tell me where I'm wrong, Robin.
Every day I'm trying to find my way.
Write that down and ask that question because I think you'll find that you're not even trying to find your way. You know the way. And the I that says, I know the way, is different from the I that says, I don't know. So you switch identities when you really do the work deeply. When you work with questions like, my mother is dying. You know, if your mother really is dying, it's not going to be, oh, yeah, who knows, there'll be a miracle. No, you have to switch into soul before you find the truth in that question. Is it true that we die? You have to go deep for that one. And in the process, can I know this for sure, switches from the ego knowing something with its thoughts, which is useful, to the soul knowing with its entire self, which is powerful beyond belief, which is liberation, which ultimately blows the ego to smithereens. And awakening, being wild, whatever, it is a process of letting the ego die, and the ego does not die calmly. But Robin, you're doing it. You are in the practice. You are in the ring of fire, and you are burning away your illusions. And I am very, very proud of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, my man. Wonderful, wonderful work. Okay. So I'm wondering, you know, I have other questions here, and I'm wondering if rather than just going straight on to those, I could take a few, if anybody would like to ask or comment on anything that just happened. And I actually want to do something else, too. Jen, can you take it off mute? And I'd like the whole group to say something. Let's all say, anybody who feels this way, you do not speak if you don't feel it. Okay? Do not lie here. This is integrity is everything, you guys. Believe it. Say into the phone, Robin, I'm with you.
Oh, Robin, I am so with you.
Robin, I'm with you.
I'm with you.
Robin, I'm
with you.
With you, Robin.
I'm with you.
With you, Robin.
Awesome, Robin.
Okay, so Jen, you can take it off.
Conference muted.
That is what happens when you get to the truth of your soul. Not only do you find the resting point, not only do you find this power that is, goes way beyond your small self, but you find that spiritually there are thousands of people with you who are supporting you even if they don't know you. And then there are other spiritual forces that step in and say, I'm with you, I'm with you, I'm with you. But they can't step in until you're in truth. Because they are true. Whatever those forces are, they live in truth, they consist of truth and compassion. And when you're in the truth, you can start to feel them. And then your courage begins to build because you're building on a solid foundation. And as ephemeral as those beings, maybe it's a little bit like Elizabeth Gilbert in the first chapter of Eat, Pray, Love, where she's sobbing and begging for any kind of help at all, and she hears this very quiet voice say, go back to bed, Liz. It's when she finally lets go of resistance, she's in the pain, she's in the mess, and she cries her way all the way to the center, and when in a moment of calm, the support comes. Liz, go back to bed. And it's always that simple. It never says, I have a 10-point plan for you, here's the process, let me coach you. It just says, be nice to yourself, sweetheart. You know, cope with this moment right here. And I'm with you. And in the next moment that's difficult, you can come back here. And I'm with you. We're never alone, but we have to find the truth point to know that. And as soon as we do, not only do you start... Those of us who are mystically inclined start to feel and maybe hear or even see something supporting us. But also in the world of humans, people are drawn to help and support us in ways that they don't even understand because it's the meta selves that are working together. So it's almost like I read one thing by a guy who had a near-death experience, and while he was supposedly dead, he saw that any two people, it's like, the physical self is like the tip of an iceberg, and the soul is the iceberg that is right under or over, but all you see is the little physical body. And he said he would watch two people talk to each other, these little physical bodies, and he would see the souls sort of above them having another conversation that the little meat cells didn't even know about. It's a little like the song, It's a Wonderful World, where he says, I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. And when you go to the place of truth, the meta-self of everyone around you comes running to say, I love you. I'm here. What can I do? And things start to go better in an almost magical way. But you use it as the truth point. And the courage to find your way to it through all the chaos that draws everything in. It is not a bunch of thoughts about how every day and every way I'm getting better and better. It is not something band-aided over the surface of your pain. It is by going through the pain into all the way to the core that you open this channel of truth. And when you're in it and you stay in it through integrity, magic unfolds around you, and it's weird because you don't even expect or need it anymore because you're in the truth and you're in peace in that moment. But then everything starts to be taken care of for you. And you start to realize, oh, the reason everything was going to hell in a handbasket was to motivate me to come to this place of deep truth. Without a lot of pain, I would have stayed on the surface, and I never would have known how to go to this place. Okay, so questions, comments, raise your hand, it's five star.
I am not seeing anybody. Let me just refresh.
Fine. I'm happy to move on with the other questions for sure, but if anybody really is dying to say something, I want to give them a chance.
Here we go.
Hi, Martha. This is my name's Sarah. And thank you. So that was so wonderful to watch. And Robin, you're just heroic for doing all of that work. And I had a very similar experience, actually, wonderfully enough, with Extet, who was coaching me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of limiting beliefs, really terrifying ones around loss of really anyone but my marriage in particular. And she was able to get me to this place of complete truth. I knew it was true. I almost felt like I described to her like an ecstasy. Like I was, it was heavenly, wonderful, knowing that there's so many wonderful things about my marriage and things I love and that everything's going to be okay for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm having trouble on a day-to-day, so I could really see the difference now between those thoughts, those limiting beliefs, and that true feeling. I can
mm-hmm.
really see the difference. But I'm having trouble on a daily basis going back there.
And this is why I would really recommend some kind of a centering practice for everyone here, so, especially before you coach, try to get into a place of deep centered truth. Robin, I poked and prodded, and he came up with his own, which is, I know that I love my sons. So what is a deep, deep, deep truth that you can reliably remember that will take you back to the core? Sometimes it's a moment where you remember, like I had a white light experience in surgery. That moment is a pathway for me back to that place. Sometimes it's something like, I know I've done my best to tell the truth. And, for example, everything I've written, I've tried really, really hard to make sure it's all true. And I know that. Right?
Okay.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I would compare it to, strangely, I had a very, actually I read Eckhart Tolle's book, and that experience he had where he felt like the universe and God and this incredible experience and fell over, you know, the beginning of The Power of Now.
Uh-huh.
So I had this experience, it was crazy when I read that, because I had exactly the same experience like 5 years ago. So I know that that is true.
Uh-huh, okay.
But,
so you can use that over and over and over. Like right now, as you think of it, can you feel the resonance of that truth?
Yeah.
So there's that silence. And this is what I saw at the 90s school, is that people would try to go, they'd say, can you be absolutely sure of something? And there would be sometimes 15 minutes of silence. And then they'd open their eyes and go, mm-hmm, yeah, okay, no, that's not true. Just the way we heard Robin say it. And you also paused, and then there's a different tone of voice because you're coming. And it feels to me always as if it's centered in the heart, physically in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, your energy right now is much quieter. And that's why it's easy to miss this place, because it's so quiet that it doesn't call any attention to itself. There's no bells and whistles. There's not like some orgasmic bliss. There's just quiet. But if you go back and go back and go back, that quiet begins to spread through your whole energy. And that is the essence of a wild thing. When I walk through the forest here every day, what amazes me is how quiet, energetically quiet, even if there's a lot of noise, if it's raining, if there are birds calling, the essence of every animal is this deep inner wordlessness, silence. and it's rapturous, but not until you've savored it for a while. I can feel you going there, Sarah. Am I wrong?
No. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and the practice is simply to sustain that feeling. And if meditation helps, then meditate. If music helps, use music. If, you know, whatever it is, if you need antidepressants to get to that place, use them. Just go to that place, right? Mm-hmm. That place is where everything good starts. And if you live in complete integrity, that place becomes your whole life. And it's as if this jewel begins to form around you that is a fractal form of your own peace is just remarkable. And it's so quiet, no one would remark on it.
Mm-hmm.
So every day, Sarah, and everybody on the phone, take a few minutes. You know, this morning I only had 5 minutes. I like to take an hour, but at least I got 5 minutes to just go to that place. And later on today, I probably will take an hour. And it's just learning to stay, learning to stay, learning to stay. And you drift away from it and you go back. And the more times you go back, the more you know how to go back.
Okay, I see. Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh. Okay, I'll take it that that helps. All right, so I'm going to read through some of these questions that I can answer just with sort of verbal responses. Nicole says, she says she wants to trust the universe more, let go of control, and deeply believe that success is on its way. Yet as I feel myself pulled to trust, I feel equally pulled to control what I can, such as vigilant financial weight and career management. I understand that there's a balance here, but I would appreciate you answering this question. As you begin to trust that the universe has your best interests in mind, how do you let go of the need for control? And the answer is you don't. You stop resisting. You say, I understand that my ego's resistance is part of the universe, and I will trust it. I will watch my ego trying to control everything, and I'll say, that's okay, sweetie. You go ahead, and I'm here now. The ego's doing all its things, and notice that she says she's trying to deeply believe that success is on its way. Any success that is on its way cannot be real. It's not here. Peace comes from being here. And when you're in absolute peace, you know, when Sarah just went there or when Robin went there, any moment you touch into that still place, everything is successful in that moment. There is no greater success than being in complete peace and congruence with yourself. That's what we're all after. That's why we want lots of money and skinny bodies and everything else we try to control. Ultimately, we're looking for that peace, that sense of everything's perfectly okay, beyond okay, everything's wonderful now. So the moment you go there, the concepts of success in the future become irrelevant. The ego may still have them. Don't fight it. It's designed to do that. That's its job. But you are not it. You are the being that is present now and that is in its deepest bliss, deepest knowledge of existence. It does. All the words fall apart because it's not an emotional state, it's a spiritual state, so you can actually be happy and in peace or sad and in peace. You can't really be in fear and in peace completely, but you can be in peace watching your own fear, paradoxically enough. So it's the idea of going to the place of peace and allowing the storm to continue. It actually unhooks you. To approach yourself with friendliness, compassion and kindness from that place of peace and to say, I will not resist the storm in my mind is the first step toward releasing it all. Gradually it loses its grip if you do not resist it. that exercise I did with Robin at the very beginning didn't work particularly well for him right now. It would have if we'd had an hour and a half to spend on it. But notice that you're just trying to get to a place of non-resistance, and if you can access any point of acceptance of the present moment as it is, just this moment, the process starts to, the whole tower of ego starts to unravel. So I hope that helps with that question. The need for control will go on, and if you don't buy it, if you don't think that's me, if you say that's my ego, eventually it will become so irrelevant, you'll just notice one day it's gone. And instead of control, you're in peace, which is way better. So Cindy said she gets, whenever she asks a question, she writes it and erases it, and every time she presses send, she gets this sick feeling and retreat. She says, I press send even on forum posts. She walks around nauseated for the rest of the day. So that is a fear response. And at the heart of it is a thought that is probably something like, that wasn't good enough. People won't think well of me. I look stupid. And that's always an opportunity when that gets triggered. It's like a wound opening so that you can go in and pull out some shrapnel. And the shrapnel is the thought, I look stupid. And you don't have to go through your whole childhood history and all the reasons you feel stupid. You just sit down and with the thought, I look stupid, or I am stupid, is going to be the deepest version of that. And then you sit with it and you say, can I absolutely know that it's true that I'm stupid? And you wait. You go in through the pathway of, okay, I know I love my kids. I know I don't want to cause suffering. I know that I love nature, whatever it is. I know that I exist. You say, all right, that's the feeling of knowing. Okay, so now I'm stupid. Does that resonate? No, it doesn't. And you watch yourself, who do I become? What do I do when I believe the thought? And you look at all its toxic effects. And then once you've really mined that out for everything it's got, you say, who would I be without the thought I'm stupid? And you see a person pressing send and then just going to feed the cat and take a shower in calm. And you guys, that is success. I know it sounds so boring. But as Katie says, you know, you work and work and work your whole life, and you always just end up sitting in a chair somewhere. You know, really, it's just how do you feel when you're sitting in a chair? That's the measure of success. Can you sit in a chair with joy and ease and lightness and peace? Or are you sitting in every chair, even if it's a throne, tense and controlling and fearful? And it's when you learn to sit in the chair with peace, I swear to God, hear me now, understand me later, the magic fills in the rest for you. People are drawn to that energy so powerfully. Oh, my gosh. Sorry, I keep talking about Byron Katie, but I do think she's fully enlightened, and I consider her a great example. And it is phenomenal for me to see how much money is drawn to her. And I always tell cadets the story of my friend who worked with Gandhi, who said you would not believe how much money it took to keep Gandhi poor. Because he'd taken this vow of poverty, but everything was so drawn to his message that money kept pouring in. And he actively didn't want it. And he had to hire people to take it away and use it in a different way. And my experience has been the same. Every time I've tried to make money by control, it has not worked. It has not worked. And then when I don't control and I'm just about trying to figure out how to live my life without fear, miracles happen, and ordinary miracles happen. And, oh, my gosh, somehow my partner Karen calls it the loaves and fishes. There's money. How did that happen? I'm not really sure. I was busy being in peace. So I know that's easy to say, but I've lived it. And I know that you can live it too. All right, so Jennifer asks, how can you use the path to stillness by feeling the insides of your hands? She gets this buzzing feeling on the insides of her hands. This is Eckhart Tolle's technique as well. And what I would say is use whatever pathway works for that person. For Robin, it's his love for his sons. For me, it's my white light experience and a whole bunch of other things. For some people, it's, you know, a transcendent experience in nature, whatever, falling in love for the first time. But that certainty that takes you to the sense of truth, there are many, many roads, and they're all equally good. So use, keep poking around for whatever works for the client. You saw me poke around with the ACT tool with Robin, and it didn't particularly work for him. So then I went to inquiry in this different way, and I think he really got someplace deep. And it just took me testing to see what would work for him. So feel relaxed. You're going to get to it. You have the client's meta self working with your meta self to hint at the right things, and you're going to get there. The more you relax, the quicker it happens. So Donna was one who asked, you know, if you're in square one and your person's soup, do you coach? Yes, absolutely. But you go to your place of peace. This is why on my ranch here, everybody's a life coach, right? And we're all very neurotic and anxious in our normal personalities. So sometimes when we don't, like over Christmas when we weren't coaching, everybody started to say, oh, my gosh, I've got to have some clients because I'm getting anxious. And putting ourselves in the service of a client means that we really take it seriously. We are going to the place of truth for this person, you know, in a way that we might not do it for ourselves. But we're also just going to go there and help them to their place of peace. You do not need to be the other person's peace or calm or anything. You need to hold the space, be present, be attentive. If you're not in peace, then you will be non-resistant to the fact that you have a hurricane going on inside, and you will still show up like a nurse who's going to hold the patient's hand while the doctor does the procedure. You are going to hold that person. And actually, that's why I love you guys so much. People don't show up at this training if they aren't willing to do that. And that is a hero's calling, that no matter what's going on with you, if you go to work with someone who's in pain, you will go to your place of peace for them, and you will hold the space for them until they find their place of peace. And the process teaches you incredibly powerfully how to stay in the place of peace. So this is why I say it's so wonderful that we do, coaching is where you do your own work and the other person pays you. It's kind of awesome. And it's important that you know that you're doing it professionally, because then you feel a professional's obligation, but the obligation is to do something transcendently spiritual in this coaching system. So it's this wonderful win-win-win-win situation. The client wins, you win, the world wins, everybody benefits. It's amazing. So Lisa asked, she said her life is changing really. The boat of her life is rocking hard as she goes through the training. And she says she wants to talk through some things with someone. Who do I consult? She says a therapist, a marriage counselor, a life coach. And then she says, I'm not ready for couples counseling. So she's answered her own question there partly. But, again, my answer would be poke around. See who your essential, go to your own place of peace. And from that peaceful place, see if there's anyone you feel inclined to share with. It may be a friend, it may be a relative, it may be another coach cadet, it may be a master coach. You may feel like going for an outside therapist. I can't answer that for you because it's an important part of your own soul's progress to your North Star. So one thing I will tell you is you can't figure it out with the mind, who to talk to. You can't figure it out. You need to feel it out. And you do it by the practice of going deep inside, to find the resonance of truth. And then you can absolutely know, check it out, that there is something trying to help you. And it's trying through all kinds of avenues. And it may be that you have all those people converge and you want to talk to all of them. It's amazing how much help shows up when you go to your place of peace. So she talks about how she gets to the point where she holds back her emotions, and then she can have explosive negative reactions, and the dynamics of the relationship get really messy. And guess what? If you go to the place of peace first, that never happens. So you go to, you know, he doesn't understand me, or he should understand me, and you go deep inside to the part of yourself that knows the truth, and you think, okay, he should understand me. Is that true? No, that's my job. And then when he doesn't understand you, you say, tell me your perspective. I want to hear more. You do judge your neighbor worksheets on, I would really recommend, I put in, she wrote a list of, do I go to a therapist, a counselor, whatever. I put in self, because I'm big on self-help. And the best self-help for me in a relationship is to do the judge your neighbor worksheet. And you go all the way down, you write everything the other person should be doing. And if you go to the place of truth, you realize you've written out these beautiful instructions about how you are trying to become different, about how your ego wants to melt. Because everything you tell him to do, you'll realize you need to do first. I need to understand myself. I need to give myself space. I need not to push myself. I need to accept myself unconditionally. I need to see the beauty in myself. And all these things you've been resisting in yourself. When you stop resisting them in yourself, when you are compassionate and loving and accepting and complimentary and helpful to you, everyone else starts to either fractal into that energy or they leave without much fuss. I had this huge blowback when I wrote my book about leaving Mormonism, and I wasn't angry and I wasn't vengeful, but I was afraid of retribution when I wrote that book. And so I got a lot of retribution. I hadn't healed it in myself. And I was telling Katie this, and she said, if you had written that book from your present state of consciousness, no one would have tried to hurt you, because you are no longer trying to hurt yourself. And the world is a mirror. If you clench your fist at it, it clenches back. So I'm not saying that people in your life are perfect or that they're under your control. What I am saying is that when you do all the things for yourself that you want other people to do for you, you attract unbelievably powerfully the people who want to treat you the way you're now treating yourself. It's these soul selves connecting and meeting over space and time and pulling the meat selves to a place where they can help each other. Fascinating to me, because I can feel the meta cells connecting, and then I can see the way they try to pull the meat cells together, and how the meat cells argue, and maybe I should go, maybe I shouldn't, maybe I should talk to this person, maybe I shouldn't. And if you let go of that and you go into the deep self, you find the meta self, that all the steps of connection get speeded up incredibly quickly, and boom, you get whatever will help you the most. It's so powerful. And after you've done it a few thousand times, you realize it is not in any way accidental. It just, things happen that are just statistically impossible. Hear me now, understand me later. Okay, so Ray asked, you know, I understand the tools we've learned are rooted in presence. I'm wondering how to help people navigate their stories in such a way that it will set people free. What type of relationship with past histories and patterns should we encourage if and when they come up? Because people are so rooted in their stories, it's hard to make forward progress. That's so true. And, Ray, what I've found most useful is that if somebody goes off into story, like, you would not believe my bastard ex-husband, let me tell you what he did. Sometimes it's helpful because it gives me a sort of vocabulary so I know how they think, and I can connect with that, like talking to Robin about how he loves his sons. That's a little piece of language now that I can use to go to a very deep spiritual truth for him. If somebody's off in a story, you can immediately hear that the energy goes away from the resonance of truth. The meta-self becomes bored and uninterested. Your own essential self, which is the same as the meta-self, is like, oh, ho-hum, this again. It just doesn't feel interesting. It feels tedious and annoying. And I always just let people run themselves out. It's no good trying to scare a horse into stopping if it's running around in a circle in a panic. You just wait until it burns itself out. So I watch and I listen. Sometimes I play solitaire on the computer while somebody just runs their story. And when they're done, I say, you know, yes, your husband did these terrible things, and your life has been ruined. Okay, this is, and you've just told me a story for 25 minutes. Okay, so I really, this is what, Ray, this is the script for all of you. When they've told the story, you say, I really hear that. That's really, I really hear your story. Could we get back to this one thought, my life is ruined, and see if it's true? Well, you wouldn't believe my husband did this. I love that you are so brilliant at telling this story, and we're going to look at the thought, my life is ruined. Is that true? And you just keep doing that gently, gently, gently. You will not go into the center with them. You acknowledge it, you value it, you love it, and you say, let's work with right now. Because if we can get you into peace and joy and relaxation and optimism right now, and you can do that in every right now, your whole life will be perfect. It's very true. Okay, so finally, Laura asked, she's been invited to speak to a small group of triathletes about the benefits of life coaching. Are there any recommendations that are specific to athletes? Yes! The Seahawks. See how we made a perfect circle coming back to the football reference at the beginning of the hour? I just love how that works. It must have been the meta-selves. But I'm dead serious. The Seahawks meditate. The coach goes to this place of truth and resonance. And their games, and I swear to God, some energy is working. And I'm going to leave you. Maybe some of you are not football fans, but I watched the Super Bowl last year because I loved the Seahawks. And Denver was playing them, and Peyton Manning is this big whoop-de-doo quarterback. He's amazing, and he comes on. He says, I'm going to play the 60 best minutes of football in the world. And it was like this big match, and they went out, and the Broncos hiked the ball. And I guess the guy who hiked the ball, you know, they throw it backwards between their legs to the quarterback. The guy who hiked the ball must have been so juiced up that he hiked the ball like way over Peyton Manning's head. I mean, this is like peewee football. And you just saw Peyton Manning look in total astonishment as the ball flew over his head and ruined the first play of the Super Bowl. And the Seahawks just mopped the floor with them. And I kept saying, they're using energy. The Hawks are using energy. It's not just physical energy. They're using the magic. And it doesn't mean that they're crushing other people deliberately. It means they can access peace. And when you access peace, things happen for you. So I actually used to run a lot of marathons, and then I quit. I had fibromyalgia, couldn't use my body. And when I went to the 9-day school, sorry to go on, but I'll be done in a minute. One day we went out for a break, and my body took off running. And it ran, like sprinted, for a long time, round and round the block. And I was like, damn, I'm in my 50s now. I haven't run for 30 years, and my body seems fine. So then I started jogging, and my knees would hurt. And then I would say, oh, running's bad for my knees. And then as I ran, I would say, is that true? And I absolutely know that it's true that jogging is bad for my knees. And as I got to the place of peace, the thought would dissolve, And as the thought dissolved, I swear to God, the pain in the knees dissolved. So much of our bodies and our circumstances are dominated by those beliefs that when you start reaching the place of peace, the things that fall away will look miraculous to you. It really happens. So before I talk to you again, I would love it if everyone would really develop at least a 5-minute-a-day practice, and maybe throughout the day. I have an alarm that rings that says, it just says loving kindness, because that's another way I can go back to that place. We have a game at our ranch where we meet for dinner, and then over dinner everyone says, when did I go home today? In what moment was I at peace? And I stood in the barn, I looked out at a deer in the rain, and there was absolute peace. We're trying to give all our attention to those moments, because what we give our attention to grows, and it's blissful to pay attention. And as you pay attention, it starts to filter through your whole life, and magic, magic, magic starts to happen. So that's my 2 cents for this month, and I've taken you a few minutes over time, and I apologize, but it's so wonderful to feel all your meta-selves on the line and to read your questions and to get a chance to coach with like-minded people. So thanks to everyone who asked questions, everyone who spoke, and everyone who listened, and we are all with each other as we go forward. So see you in a few weeks.
Thanks, Martha.
Bye.